This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie, Miranda, Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Frenchies,
so many dudes.
Every single dude,
all the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee and Rose Cerno. I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is
Couldn't Help But Wonder. A podcast where we talk about Sex and the City and how it relates
to us. Ooh, that was some good harmonizing there.
I know. We're going to start a band.
Hi, Rosa Schmalutsu. How are you doing?
God, everyone always calls me that. So annoying.
How are you? Who are you?
Oh,
what
God.
Is up?
Who am I this week? That's interesting. Yeah, okay, well,
it?
I would say, maybe a Carrie.
Okay.
Because I changed my... I mean, this is a podcast. You guys can't see me, but I'm like, every time we record, we do it on video and I'm laying on ice. So I'm not exactly what you would call like in dating shape, but nonetheless, I'm on the apps.
Hmm.
And I guess I'm a Carrie because I feel like Carrie's really adventurous and she like travels the world for love. And I changed my city from LA to Portland because I wanted to see the guys in Portland. And
okay.
Just like my suspicion,
mm-hmm.
literally, I like got like 1,000 matches instantly, all like tall, handsome, like outdoorsy, kind, down to earth.
I do feel like you have a Portland personality a little bit.
More than LA, I would say.
Which is a great thing because I love Portland and everyone I've met from there is like awesome and super friendly. And like you said, like very outdoorsy and fun.
Just a little more down to earth, you know. And I've just
and they love
like,
food. They have great taste in food.
They definitely have great taste in food. And just in this, I mean, I know this is like a crazy thing to say because there are truly millions of people in LA, but I just don't think that it's a good city to like meet somebody to settle down with. It just doesn't feel like people are here to do that. Similar to New York. I mean, I just feel like there's some cities that are just so ambitious and career focused that like, you know. I just think everybody here wants to be famous, which isn't a bad thing. It's just people are not quite as thinking about like relationships, in my opinion.
Yes. And it's also a weird time to be in LA because LA isn't really LA right now in a lot of ways. It's like all those people with those ambitions are here, but they can't really put them anywhere necessarily because nothing's really happening.
So well, no like cities are normal right now. Like
Right. But I'm saying like LA especially, like the thing that makes LA LA and the reason people move to LA, it's like
not here.
So it's this weird, like stifled energy. I feel like people have like pent up creativity. They don't know where to put it or something.
Definitely.
It's like in the air here.
Yeah, but for me, swiping on Portland is a little less about like COVID and more just like I've kind of always thought. I don't know. I was just curious. It was almost just like an experiment because
it's a great idea. I love that idea. Also, Portland's close. If you meet someone in Portland, you guys fly back and forth. It's only like an hour and a half flight, 2 hours.
Yeah. And I also just kind of feel like right now, technically, it doesn't matter. I mean, listen, I can't even do anything right now. I can't even move. So nothing can even happen until I get a surgery. But just, you know, a lot of what's happening with dating right now is like texting and FaceTiming anyway. So it doesn't really matter. If somebody's in the same city as you, and I figure like cut to a few months, if I, you know, when I'm on my feet and I'm fine again, you know, there's no work that I'm doing here that I couldn't do somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm talking to a couple really cute, nice guys and, you know, I'm very open. It says travel mode. They're like, oh, where are you from? And I'm just like being super open. I'm like, yeah, I just have this sense that like, I mean, personally, I don't say this because I don't like to be negative when I'm talking to new people, but like, I just don't think guys in LA, good guys are already in relationships. They moved here with their girlfriends from another city. I just kind of feel
interesting.
Like, yeah, I mean, maybe that's wildly closed-minded. I just feel like there's a lot of more than normal, like, narcissists and workaholics and just people that just don't really have the bandwidth or interest in, like, having a family or committing. And I think in smaller cities where people's dreams are smaller, family is more important and stuff like that.
Oh, I think that's, yeah, I think that that is a really smart assessment. And I like that you're also saying it on the podcast because I think it's a good thing to put out there of like, don't close yourself off just to the place you're from. Like, you know, there are a lot of problems I'm sure that people find with dating apps. Like, you know, do they like them? Obviously it's like fun to meet people in person, whatever, all the complaints that you hear over the years. But it's like one of the really amazing things is that your scope can be really big.
That's totally true.
And it's exciting that you're using it in that way. And I think that's like very inspiring.
Thanks. It was also kind of crazy because it's like just a hypothesis I had. Where I was like, I wonder if the guys in Portland are different. And they really are. As somebody who has swiped in LA for years, they're just different there. They just are.
Why am I laughing? Because we're talking about it like they're Europeans or like you went to some
foreign
country.
But you know, city
country.
By city is really
totally agree with you. I'm not
making
fun.
Culture here is so different.
You're so right. It's so true. It's just very funny because Portland's so close. But you're like, yeah, it's a different world.
Jamie,
it
you're
is.
So lucky you've never had to swipe in LA. I'm telling you, so many guys' profiles are like,
oh, I'd
just
have such
like
a problem, especially because so we're writers.
Self-absorbed.
I'd be like, what is this stupid shit you wrote?
Not even the bios, but like, just like so looks so obsessed and looks focused and...
You a lot know, of selfies on their profiles.
Selfies and gyms
That's
and shirtless
horrifying.
And like
horrifying.
And like hot in this really like TikTok star
no.
way. It's just
Bye.
Not
no.
me. You
no.
know what I mean?
No, shut it down. Don't
right.
like it. Don't
yeah.
like it. It's a hard pass for me immediately. I literally have like a visceral reaction to you even saying that.
Girl, I'm telling you, it's like you go on it and it's different than other cities. Like even swiping in New York, the guys are hotter in a different way. It's just way less like... less actors and less musicians
yeah.
and less DJs and stuff like this, you know?
It's interesting. My perception of New York men is that at least the people I know in New York, they're very traditional. It's very interesting because it feels like such a non-traditional place. But like the more people I meet, it's just like, oh yeah, like me and my wife and my babies, we're all just kind of crammed into this apartment. And you're just like, interesting that you picked New York because the lifestyle really lends itself to like being single or maybe you
totally.
Have a partner and it's just the two of you. Like, it's just interesting to me. Everybody I know, just in my circle, at least the people I know, they're really trying to take that sort of suburban life and just put it in the city. And it's kind of like, it's kind of nonsensical, but also New York's fabulous. And obviously I'm not going to shit on New York because everyone here knows how much I love it.
Well, it's also interesting because I agree. And there's so many versions of New York. Like there's a version where you're like an artist and you never get married and you're just
yep.
fabulous. And you, but then there's totally like
the
guys
Wall
who work
Street,
guys
like,
who work in finance
yeah.
and their wives that work in PR and they have
yep.
great, you know, they've got kids and they do that whole, I mean, not to say those are the only people to get married, but there's a lot of versions of New York to be had.
Yeah. And that also is a big pocket of it. I feel like
it
I don't
is,
even
huge.
Know that crowd really, but I feel like everyone knows someone in that crowd. There's always that person who's like, we have an apartment in the city and then we're looking to get a
Montauk
vacation house at
stuff,
some point.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Girl, who are you
yeah.
this week?
I guess I'm a bit of a Charlotte.
Okay.
Without going into detail, because it's really not about my relationship, I'm just in a really weird headspace, sort of like just I feel like I'm at a crossroads in my life. I feel a little Charlotte in Trey. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to go into detail about it. But I'm just in a place where I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I really sometimes genuinely don't know that I'm built for marriage. And it's a very scary thing to admit. And it's something that Dan and I openly talk about. I don't feel like I'm like shitting on him behind his back. Yeah, 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 exactly. But I often feel like the people around me who I know who are married, at least outwardly, they really seem to be in it to win it. They love the concept of marriage. The partnership is like really, really strong. And like Dan, I think, comes from that background more than I do. My parents.
You said that you think that his parents have a nice marriage.
I do. I really do. Yeah. And again, like, it's not even that they didn't have hard times, right, which, I mean, every family goes of through. Course, you're insane yes. if you don't have them.
Right.
But it's not even that they didn't have hard times. Like, they raised three boys. You know, they lived in, on Long Island, which is very expensive. Like, there was definitely hardship.
Yeah.
But, like, it was never a question. It's like, we're a team. And I sometimes wonder, I don't know if it's an, if it's because I'm an only child or a combination of that plus other things. My parents definitely did not have an, don't currently have an idyllic marriage in my mind. My mom operates very independently of my dad. And sometimes I'm just in this headspace of, like, am I more my mom than I realize? And is that okay?
Such a hard thing.
Or is that something you have to fight? Because what is normal? What is
right?
What is your standard? What are you going for? And it's, I just find myself in a space where I really feel alone, and I want to be honest about it on the podcast because, I mean, who knows who's listening, but I feel like there's not a lot of transparency about marriage doubt. I feel like there's a lot of talk about divorce, and there's a lot of talk about getting married and how to stay married, but no one talks about doubt even though you are married.
That's really interesting.
And I am at a real breaking point. I've thought about it a lot. Again, Dan has heard me say all this. It's just like, I just don't know. I don't know. I honestly am like always, I'm always thinking about it, and it's very lonely. I don't know who to talk to about it. Even if you talk to like a therapist, they're just kind of like, well, you have
no, you need to talk
like,
about what a friend who's going through the exact same thing.
And there's so few. So if anyone's listening and they've had similar feelings or confusion or yeah, and I don't even think it's like 1 foot out the door. It's more like, you're just wrestling with it. Like, I just think about it a lot. It takes up a lot of my headspace. And it's very scary because it just makes you feel really abnormal because there's all these standards that have been set up for everyone. And I mean, I even wrote a book about weddings. But my book about weddings, I was trying to be honest about how hard planning my wedding was. Like, my whole, if I had, whatever, I know nothing about branding. I'm terrible at it. But if I ever had like a mission statement, it would be to like make people feel less alone in what in my work and my comedy and everything. I just want people to not feel like they're crazy. And like, I feel really crazy right now. So if anyone else out there feels crazy, I'm with you.
First of all, Jamie, thank you so much for sharing that. It was really brave, you know, and really honest and really vulnerable. And I know you're a private person, so I know that's not easy for you to talk about these
things.
It's
truly terrifying.
But I'm proud of you. And, you know, you said something that was really interesting to me about how you noticed that your mom, even though she's in a decades-long marriage, operates really independently.
Yes.
And you were saying that, like, maybe you're like that and you don't know if it's good or bad. I found that so interesting because it's like, I think something that's really challenging about getting older is like, no matter who your parents are, they have good qualities and bad qualities. And you are the universal you. We're all a combination of those qualities. And I think as you get older, you really start to see it.
It's so true.
And you're just
it's
like,
so true.
It's like
everything
stunning
is
how much it's there. Right.
Magnified. You're under a magnifying glass as you get older. Everything.
Yeah. And it's like, oh my God. And I think that you bring up something that has to do with this, which is perhaps you are operating like your mother in a marriage, which is extremely independently. Mm-hmm. And you're like Jamie, who happens to be married, instead of like Jamie and
that
Deanna.
That is 100% my mom. She is, yeah, she is right. Mom who happens to be married.
Right. And you're wondering, is that who I am and I like that? Is that who I am and I don't like that?
Yeah.
Is that my essence? And I think it's really hard to know. Like, it's really tough to know. Like, does that
it's
work
also
for
like,
me? Do
even
I
if
like
that
it?
Were a, let's say even on paper, like legally, that was a great quality. Let's say like 100% written in stone, that's a great quality. Because my mother possesses it, there's a part of me that might resent it because everybody on some level has such a complicated, I mean, I love my mom. My mom and I get along swimmingly.
Right.
But there's always that thing of like, oh, I'm becoming my mother. So you don't even know do you even have a proper lens to look at that quality through?
I think it's also tough because you don't look at your parents' marriages like, I really want that. And so
I have never wanted something less.
Right.
My parents' marriage is literally my greatest fear.
Right.
Greatest fear, hands down.
To me.
And also to have a child born into that.
Well, Jamie.
To create another Jamie, which sounds really self-loathing.
Listen, first of all, we would all be so lucky to have another Jamie in this world. You know, listen, I'm really proud of you for talking about it. I don't think anyone has answers. This is a journey that, like Charlotte, you are on, and you have my support, and you have Julia's support, and all your good friends who love you so much, and your family, and all the Wonderistos, and Sky, and Anna, and, you know, it's like... You know, it's interesting. It's like, I don't believe in advice because I don't think anyone knows what anyone else is going through. And,
no.
And I just think everyone's on their own journey. And so I feel for you because it's hard to go through something where you don't have other people that are very close to you that are going through the same thing. I could see how that would be lonely because even if people love the fuck out of you and they're having their own things, it's hard to feel like your problem is so unique. That's not a good feeling.
I think we're also in a place too. This is the last thing I'll say, and then we'll, you know, obviously this is the Sex and the City podcast. We'll get into it. Thank you, Sky, for the laugh. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Clarify. I love you. You know what? I always bring us back, and that's something I contribute to this show. I forgot what I was going to say. I think that as we get older, there's also this thing of like, and I've brought this up sort of on the show before. But I do think people become more solidified in their lives and their nest and their tribe. And, you know, it's like your family becomes really insular and all those. I'm not even saying that is a bad thing. That's just sort of naturally what happens.
Yes,
because
agreed.
Your responsibility is to your family and whatever. You keep you get rid of toxic people. So you have less friends in some ways,
yes,
or less close.
Totally.
You have less bullshit friends, I would say. And I think that because of that, I think that whenever I'm feeling this way, I never want to like burden people. Because I feel like, oh my God, like their lives are already so full. Like, why would they even want to talk about something like this? And is it even anything that anyone could help me with? Like, I truly think it's just sort of a dialogue that exists in my head. And it's always been there a little bit.
Well, I just want to tell you as a friend and somebody who loves you, like maybe somebody, none of us will have the answers, but I can just say as a friend, when somebody, a friend, a sister, somebody who's in a relationship with someone, when somebody tells me what's going on with them, it makes me feel closer and it makes me feel lucky that somebody trusted me with their feelings. So just so you know, it's literally never a burden. It builds intimacy, right? Because it's like,
that's true.
Because it's like, if I was only telling you what was going on with me and you never told me what was going on with you, it would feel unequal.
Yeah.
And also it's not like, it's like when people you love are going through things, it's not like hearing what your people that you love are going through. It's like, oh, I wish Jamie would just shut up and talk about like makeup or something. It's like, no, I care about you. Of course I care what you're thinking, you know?
Ugh, yeah, that's interesting.
It's just so you know, it's never a burden for anyone who cares about you. Just like
nice.
When I tell you what's going on and you're so loving to me, I never feel like you're like, oh, could Rose just get it? Because you love me,
yeah.
And it goes both ways, you know?
Right.
Just so you know.
That's nice.
Just keep that in your back pocket.
Thank you. I will.
Well, this was a very open, a very vulnerable, very, you know, I really want to thank Jamie for being so candid. And, you know, I know our listeners love Jamie so much, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of love for this. And,
thanks.
And, you know, everyone reach out. And Jamie, take us into what we're dealing with today.
Okay, no problem. Let's bring it back to Sex and the Motherfucking
You know what, though? Us
city.
Talking about worries about marriage and dating, that is absolutely Sex and the City, so.
Oh, yeah. It 100% is in our world, which is even why I was more inclined to bring it up.
Good.
But yeah, I just want to like destigmatize anything that I feel is sort of has a stigma around it. Maybe that's because I have like a greater level of shame or something. I don't know. Come for me, Brené Brown. I'll work on it. But But thank you,
Admitting
Skylar.
Your feelings, period, is terrifying.
My greatest fan, Skylar Hanrahan. No, but I just want to, in case someone is sitting with this level of shame or confusion or thoughts or whatever you want to call it, yeah, I just think it's better to put it out there because once you do, it does give it, it takes away its power in a lot of ways. And it normalizes
I think being alone
it.
With something makes it 10 times worse.
Oh, 100%. I know. I probably, yeah, exactly.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to tell you about episode 292 of Office Hours Live with our special guest, documentary filmmaker Lance Oppenheim, and musical guests, Melinda Sullivan and Larry Goldings. You can find us on your podcast app of choice.
And
goodbye.
And at youtube.com.
And at youtube.com/goodbye.
/office hours live.
Okay. Well, anyways, Sex and the City. Here we go. Season 4, episode 18. It's called I Heart NY.
And now, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but this is the last episode of season 4.
Oh, my God. Okay. We have to.
It's also.
We got to get a fun guest for our little bridge episode.
You're
we gotta
right.
Figure it's, that out.
It's such a reflective episode. And also, I just wanted to shout out just because he just passed away and it's sad and he was a wonderful person. But I Heart NY was that famous logo was created by Milton Glaser.
That's right.
Skylar, what don't you know? How come you haven't won
that
Jeopardy
was recent.
Yet?
I remember that just happened.
I've tried out for Jeopardy many times. I've never gotten
it. Oh my God,
I would Skylar, love to do it.
You'd be the contestant.
I do occasionally think of I had a college trivia game that I think of how I blew it often. Oh, it's like, you know,
God.
How you like
Skylar.
Occasionally
it like wakes you up at night. Skylar?
I mean, can we be more obsessed with Skylar Hanrath? He's literally the best person on the planet.
Pub quiz champion.
Funny. Oh my God.
I still kick myself over it.
Okay. Well, you know what? Again, this shame seems to be the theme of the episode. And I think yours is right on par with mine. I mean, trivia,
it's
you know,
100%.
marriage doubts, you know,
but,
guys.
But Jamie, the difference between your shame and Skylar's is that he should be ashamed to not have won.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's
have
disgusting.
It's
get
pretty
it together,
mine,
guy.
Mine is openly embarrassing. So.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, guys. Okay. This is a very emotional episode. Jamie's, you know, who she was this week was just a tiny amuse-bouche of what's to come.
Oh, yes.
Think, you know.
A little aperitif.
Yeah. Break out your Kleenex. Things are going to get emosh.
Mm-hmm.
So the season finale kicks off with Carrie breaking out the first extra blanket of the year. New York is getting cold, so she calls up Big to talk the changing of the seasons and feeling lonely. She wants to catch up, so she grabs a pizza and heads over. When she gets there, however, his place looks different. It's covered in boxes. He's moving to Napa. Big Water Winery. Ew, that's disgusting. Bob's big boy bought a winery.
He's so big.
It's just so
it's
big.
It's because he's big. He could buy a winery.
Skylar, that's
big
hot
adult
when
grape
girls
juice.
Go, your penis is so big.
Okay. I like where this is headed. Okay. Just Kinky. Read that sentence again for clarity.
Thank
we
you.
On it so much.
Big bought a winery and Carrie is freaked out.
And over at Richard's, Samantha is impatiently waiting in bed, tearing through a box of chocolates. When he finally shows up, he is 3 hours late and Sam is annoyed. She has a gift for him, a framed painting of 3 hearts. He says, thanks, and they hook up.
Also, no offense, but that painting,
fucking painting
looked like it cost $10.99 from Canal Street.
Literally, Bed Bath and Beyond's like
artwork, art section.
Yeah, their clearance. Get the fuck, get rid of this. Throw it in the Beyond.
Oh my God.
And we'll get to it. But I was like genuinely surprised when she smashed it later that it was framed, that it had glass on it. Like I. It
so
didn't
expensive.
Seem. Yeah, it didn't seem like it was a have glass on it painting of hearts.
Definitely plastic. Definitely.
I mean,
yeah. That's
for
so
somebody
funny.
That spends thousands of dollars on a purse, she definitely spent like $17.99 at IKEA.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, the way she just is like, it's for you. Like, I thought of you when I saw it. It's just like, wait.
Why?
What? Why? What about this screams Richard?
Also,
I don't even
exactly.
Understand.
Yeah. Oh my
it's
God.
Also, it's also one of those things where like, if you got that gift, it would actually be kind of insulting.
You'd be like, honestly, why? Like, why do you think I have such cheap taste?
So
like
corporate.
You went to Home Goods and like cleaned up, but that doesn't mean
God.
That this is me.
It's like such like, ugh. Yeah, anyway, obviously really we're all
bad.
Horrified by the gift.
I know. Okay. Anyways, keep going.
So Big and Carrie dig through the stuff he hasn't already packed to go to California, which includes a blood, sweat, and tears record. He puts on Moon River, which she wants to dismiss as corny, but only Big can make it uncorny. They dance until the record starts skipping and Carrie heads out. She'll just have to catch him before he leaves.
Okay, now the tough question.
Should you sleep with him one last time?
Exactly. Going out of business sex, what do we think?
No.
Okay, quick draw. Give it a second here.
No.
We like each other. We respect each other. It could be nice. Romantic.
No.
You had sex with Steve.
Uh-huh. Sex with an ex can be depressing. If it's good, you don't have it anymore. If it's bad, you just had sex with an ex.
It wouldn't be bad.
Oh.
I'm just saying. Aren't you afraid that the sheer force of it all will just pull you back into all that big stuff again?
No, he's not Niagara Falls.
Isn't he?
I love you, sweetie, but you're not giving me any credit. This is not 2 years ago. Things have changed. I'm different now. Big and I are different. I feel safe around him. He's like this great man in my life, and he's leaving.
Use a condom. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I don't know how you survived any of it, Big or Aiden. This love stuff is a motherfucker.
Did you just say love?
Oh, what the hell. My name is Samantha, and I'm a loveaholic.
Hi, Samantha.
It's so infuriating. I mean, where can this possibly go? No one actually makes these relationship things work, do they?
Sure, I think they're the same people that leave New York.
I'm just really surprised Big is moving. I always thought... Never mind.
You always thought what? Never mind.
I just always thought that you two would end up together.
How?
I don't know. Yes, they made mistakes, but they were never supposed to be together. If she was going to wind up with anybody, it was Aiden.
This is all very informative.
In some ways, it's kind of safe because it's like, if they're going to be gone. I mean, I guess it's tough because it's not like he's going to Singapore. He's going to Napa. And even though, yes, that's far, he's rich and he has endless resources. So I guess it's tricky. It's like, on one sense, it feels like, oh, it's a safe thing. They can have the best sex ever. They can literally even say, I love you if they want, but he's going to be gone, right? So in a way, it feels like you're protected because just the logistics. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think in the context of like a relationship that you're unsure about, I think that having sex one last time can be really telling.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
Like, I remember when I was breaking up with this guy in like my mid-20s, and I remember being like, I kind of missed him. So we like had sex one more time, and then it was very clear that it was over. And I know that sounds like a little manipulative.
No,
like,
it's not.
Let me just like test it out.
No, I just think that makes sense.
But it is really telling. I think in some ways, it's like a really great way to sort of know where you stand. And I think that's brilliant.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So if you can kind of get past sort of unorthodox advice, but if you can get past like the emotional ties or not, I mean, if you can't get past the emotional ties, well, then that's something too. But I do think that in this case with Carrie and Big, it's not sleeping together is not when people are like, oh, it's going to make things complicated. It's already complicated. You already have the feelings.
That is,
you know,
so true.
If you have sex, it's not that, sure, it definitely compounds things and like, you know, physically, you know, obviously like, you know, women bond quickly by way of sex and become very attached and all the things and the hormones and da da da. But I think that the feelings are already there. So if you're considering it, it's actually not, I think it's actually not as big of a deal considering.
I actually think this is very good advice.
You do? I think it's kind of crazy, but
I think it makes a lot of sense because I think you're right. It's like they've had this passionate love affair. Then they sort of became friend confidants and she doesn't really know how she feels about him going. And I think you're kind of right that, well, it's interesting because when she's like, should I have sex with him? She's making it sound like, should I enjoy one last ride? Because she's like, I know the sex is going to be good. We have great sex. So she's kind of making it just sound like, hey, do you guys co-sign on me having really hot sex tonight? Like with an ex.
Yeah. I think also the subtext is kind of like, it's almost like, do you, like, it's almost a little like saving face. It's like, she is giving up some of her power.
That's true.
And I think that is, to me, if I were in this situation, that would be the thing I'd be bummed about. I'd be like, damn it, I really love withholding to have like something, like, what's the word? Like collateral to like lord over you, as like deeply manipulative as that sounds.
No, it actually makes
I love that, like, ooh, like you... You know, you can hang out with me, but like you can't fuck me.
Well, I actually think that makes a lot of sense, Jamie, because in a lot of ways he does have all the power in this relationship, because even though he proposed to her after he got like dumped and divorced and all this shit, like the majority of their relationship, she was like, I would like you to commit. I want you to care. I want you to want me to. And he just was like keeping her at arm's length. No, 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 no. So it's almost like all she has is like, I won't sleep with you, because in a lot of ways she wants much more than he can give, even though once in a while in a desperate state, he's like, fuck it. Why don't we just do the damn thing? But it always feels pretty hollow. And, you know,
it's a little bit like their dynamic now is like, it's after the will they won't they. They've restored it's after the will they won't they, and they already have, and now they've restored the will they won't they. So it's like if Carrie sleeps with him, she gives up that dynamic, which is just sort of a reflection of what you were saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a really close friend who sort of has like something like this on and off again thing with an impossible person. Mm-hmm. And she recently kind of came to her friends in this kind of way, like Carrie, to be like, what do you guys think about me having sex with him just because it's COVID and I'm horny and all this? And it was very similar to this scenario where the arguments from her friends, myself included, were the same that Miranda and Charlotte and everybody was kind of having, of like, I'm scared that this is a slippery slope, right? And yeah, I feel like I'm of two minds, because I'm on one hand, I really agree with Jamie about like sex is a really good barometer to see how you actually feel about somebody, and it can kind of tell you what your real feelings are, which I completely agree with. But I do worry a little bit about Carrie, because she's so emotionally unstable. That
she like just broke up with Aiden.
Yeah, and she can't really be single, and she's kind of has an addiction to Big. And even if he goes to Napa, sleeping with him again could like put her back. And then for the next 6 months, every guy she dates, it's like, oh well, he's not Big, so fuck it. Yeah. I don't know. It's complicated.
She's gonna like miss him.
Have you ever had something like this where either somebody, a lover, was about to leave, or it was like the last time, and like you were like, should I do this? Should I not?
I don't think so. I think the close, it's so interesting. Like, I was thinking about like, you know, oh, he's leaving. It's the end of an era. It's like, I don't know why I don't have these emotional ties. Like, there are so many milestones in your life that are so clear. It's like having a baby is a very clear milestone. Getting married, clear milestone. Like, you know, getting like a promotion that you were really, really going for years and years.
Whatever,
yeah, exactly. Like, there are these milestones that happen, whether you care to call them milestones or not. They are.
They're life milestones, yeah.
Exactly. And then, but I've never felt like moving to a different city has been, unless something happened upon that move, yes, that's a big shift. But just the whole like moving away, like I remember when I moved to New York from Texas, I don't remember it at all. I don't remember packing for it. I don't remember unpacking. I don't remember like buying furniture for my new place. Like, I don't know why I don't glamorize or crystallize those things. It's only as significant as you make it. But I think it's interesting that Carrie is so like, you're leaving New York? Like, he's like fucking like pulling out of the like an old train station, and he like drops his scarf out the window for her to catch. Like, it's just it's interesting. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. He's a rich dude and he's buying a winery. It's like, of course, you just move around. Sometimes you move around when you have a lot of money. I don't know.
It is such a thing, though, in particular with New York. Like, after I finished watching this episode, have you ever read that famous Joan Didion essay, Goodbye to All That, about her leaving New York in her late 20s? It's basically like she moves to New York in her early 20s to become a writer, to work at magazines and everything. And then she just like has this feeling that she sort of loses 8 years, and she like grows up and she gets married, and then she just doesn't really want to deal with what New York is anymore. Like it just sort of changes for her, and she ends up leaving New York, and that's the whole notion of the goodbye to all that.
Yeah.
And I think that New York has that particular resonance and
when people
sort of
leave,
romance
it's a huge
it.
Deal.
Exactly.
I left and I didn't even I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm the biggest fan of that city. But when I moved to LA from New York, I was just like, yeah, I just got to go. I have a job. That's
but you know what,
you
Jamie? I also think because you're an entertainer and traveling is part of your job, you're like a rambling man. It's kind of like
know,
part
I
of
am.
It. Because you know what I was thinking?
A rambling man.
Yeah, it's
you
like.
You got your little bindle. You got your your acoustic guitar.
But I do think like when you live in New York, especially if you live in New York and you love New York, it feels like the center of the universe. And like, imagine being anywhere else is like a joke. I mean, that's definitely where Carrie is. Like, Carrie's like, her ethnicity is New York. You know what I mean?
I think that's the part I don't know why I don't identify with that. Because if anyone identifies with that, it should be me. Like, I'm a ride or die. I don't understand why I don't have that more. But it probably has to do with that I do stand up and I travel. Well, not right now.
But you've also left New York to live. Like, she's never done that. She's been there and she's staying, like, until she dies.
That's true.
You know?
You're right. She's going to become, like, Mrs. Cohen from that episode.
I also think it's just, like, such a... This whole episode is such a, like, changing of the seasons of life episode.
Yeah.
So it is reflecting that a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. Where it's just, like, We're leaving the summer of Big and Carrie, and we're entering the fall of Big and Carrie. So
yeah,
to speak.
I think stylistically it makes sense that they're kind of making this, and also like with the what's the song he plays, Moon River. It's just, you know, they are sort of making this into
it's very sentimental.
Sort of like, yes, very like Gone with the Wind. Like you know, they're really trying to make this feel sort of like an old movie or something, like an old romantic movie, but. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think I've romanticized New York until I left New York, I think is my point. I didn't romanticize it while I was there.
I haven't had a lot of relationships end because somebody like moved across the country, but I do know that I haven't had the best boundaries like as relationships are crumbling and ending. And I think I've had a lot of like sex like the day or two after a breakup or a week after a breakup or like while we're breaking up. And it's always, in my opinion, really sad. Like, even if it's actually
you're
good.
You're so right.
It's always
you're
really,
so
really sad.
Right.
And it always feels wrong. Even if it's physically enjoyable, it's always like, it's just like, this is wrong. This is bad. It makes me sad. It's like, not even to say that you shouldn't do it, because like life is about doing those things and feeling the experiences and making mistakes and whatever. But I just, knowing how it's been an experience for me, I would never tell a friend like, you gotta do that. Have sex with somebody who really fucking destroyed you. Just do it again. Like, I just think it's a fantasy. I think it feeling good is like good and then bad.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I think a lot of sex that's any sex that's sort of outside of like a secure relationship is just like, whew, it's real dicey.
That's such a good point.
It's like, it is so glamorized, especially in the show. Well, actually, the show does a really good job of being like, actually, it's pretty complicated. I think that's why we like the show, is that these women are never just like, yeah. I mean, like even Samantha, who's kind of like, yeah, I'm just like fucking my way, you know, one city block at a time, you know? Yesterday was 72nd Street, tomorrow 73rd, whatever. Like, I even think she is like, I'm in love. I bought this ugly painting for him. Like, help me.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
That's why the show's good. It's because it really does show all sides of what it's like to be single in New York, which is a fabulous notion. But, you know, sometimes the reality of it sets in and it's like, oh, it's just really fucking lonely.
Yeah, that's really true. God, it's such an interesting, so interesting to me too, because like my POV on their relationship is so unromantic. Like the fact that he didn't want to commit to her, like married someone else. And then when that someone else that he married instead of her divorced him, then he's like, hey, like my ego would just be, for better or for worse, that would just really make me feel like shit. Like the fact that she even has romantic feelings, I find so interesting. Because if I was somebody's second choice that they just kind of crawled to after their own marriage fell apart when they didn't even want to marry me, I would just have a hard time even being attracted after that.
It is wild.
So unappealing.
Break it down like
it's
that.
So
yeah.
Bad for your self-esteem. It's like, oh, you mean the whole time when we were together, you didn't want to get married. Then you instantly married a girl who's younger and like more, you know, Eurocentric, patriarchal pretty, and then, you know, you kind of lost your shit and she left you, and now you're a mess and now you like me. Like, thanks
also,
a lot.
Also, it's that notion of like, yeah, like there's something, it's a little bit like cool girl fantasy where it's like, yeah, I mean, we had a past and like, yeah, he shit all over me and like, yeah, he ruined my life and he like broke my heart 24 times. But you know what? Like, now we're friends and it's actually like really fucking cool.
Yeah, you're
you know,
right.
It's cool. Like,
total bullshit.
We can hang, we can fucking whatever twist in his living room to this old song.
Wait,
he
Jamie,
loves.
We can twist in his living room. That is so hilarious.
Like, it's all just even him being like, mansplaining fucking Moon River, like my parents they would play this record when my mom was getting ready to go out on the town. She's like, shut up, ask her how she's doing.
This is like the best.
I'm on a real tear today.
I'm absolutely loving it. Yeah, I think that's really true. Yeah, I just find
like, if she told the story about her parents, he'd be like, sorry, what did you say? I was looking at my phone.
Wait,
like,
Jamie. That is incredible. Yeah, I find their relationship so deeply unromantic because I put myself in her position. And anytime someone has ever come back to me after they were like dissed or dumped, I'm like, gross.
I don't think I would have sex with him simply because I would want to have that power. I would need that power. I would need that card in my back pocket.
After you were completely, listen, after somebody treats you like a second place option.
Yep.
I mean, how can you ever want to? I mean, maybe I'm being short-sighted, but that would just be really tough for me to be like excited about.
I think that what you're saying also reflects on this episode in particular feels so like we're kind of hand waving that history away. Like you can feel the writing of it so much. Mm-hmm. And like at the end of that, that clip in particular, there's that whole sort of almost like winking at the fans or winking at the viewership line from Miranda and Charlotte, where they're going back and forth over thinking that Carrie was going to end up with Big or Carrie was going to end up with Aiden. Like there is this consciousness of the conversation around the show. Like that's what people thought the real sort of dynamic was too. And it's this interesting kind of meta thing that they don't always do, but sometimes they will play around with because it's a good writing opportunity, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just interesting because the scene is played out like it's like this great love affair and it's so romantic and it's like this huge moment. And I'm just like, is that really it? You know what? It's just amazing how we can delude ourselves. I'll just say that.
Like, oh my God, Rose, that is so well put. It is so delusional. It's delusional.
Like, oh, this to is be so like, romantic.
He's yeah. Oh, my God.
Red
it's so
wine
romantic.
And he's rich and he's putting on
Please,
old music.
Give
it's
me
like
a fucking
he
break.
Literally would not marry you, then immediately married a woman in her 20s, then immediately cheated on her and then was like drunk. Like, should we get together?
If this happened to me in real life and I went over there and he started talking about blood, sweat and tears, I would probably just be like
laugh in his face.
I got to be honest. I just came over here to fuck. So do you want to do that? Because if you don't, I'm probably going to go. I don't have time for like your backstory.
Oh my God, that's
I'd
so
be angry.
True. That's so
I'd
true.
Be livid, honestly.
Yeah, don't try and fucking butter me up. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of hard about like watching them together is like, it's like the definition of a charming person is treating you like shit, but then like looking good in a suit and being like, hey, babe, did you know that like actually this is where Frank Sinatra took his first prostitute? And you're like, who cares? It's just
cool.
Like,
wow,
it's like,
that's
it's
so cool.
It's like being that age and being hurt by somebody and still coming back and thinking that that's worthwhile and sexy. It's like the first time around, you're allowed to think it's sexy. But after somebody puts you out like a cigarette, then the next time around, it's not. You know what I mean? But it still is for
her. I don't find a man explaining truly anything sexy. The second he started talking to his parents, I'd be like, can we just eat pizza and not talk?
He's just so image. He's just all image. And
it's not a conversation. It's one-sided. I just found it not romantic. I don't know why. I just, again, if it was someone that we love, that we were invested in, it'd be like, oh, that's interesting. We learned something about Big's parents. We learned something about, like, you know, that's interesting. He's kind of a strong, silent type. He's letting us in a little bit. I cannot invest in him. I'm like, I just don't, if it were anyone else, I would care. I don't care about you.
That's
if you want to fuck, that's great. Let's fuck. That's great. I mean, we should do that. I honestly, anything else, though, I'm not interested.
Yeah, I think if I were her friends, like, as I was saying, like, I don't like to give advice, but I still have my personal opinions. And if I was one of her friends, I would be kind of like, I would be sort of sad for my friend. I'd be like, man, it kind of so sucks that, like, my beautiful, incredible friend who's so amazing is still captivated by this guy.
I know.
Like, I'm actually shocked that Charlotte's like, I thought you guys would end up together. I'm like, Charlotte, do you see anything? Like, Charlotte's also obsessed with image, though, so I guess that makes sense.
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe she really likes Big because he's, like, a good rich look for Carrie or something. Yeah, that's really very possible.
But, I mean, Jamie, imagine you being close friends with Carrie and then, like, secretly want or being like, God, I always thought you'd end up with Big. It's like, you did? Why?
Yeah, I know. That's one of those things where I'm like, if this was written today, you'd be like, record scratch. Charlotte, can you explain yourself?
Yeah.
Because we all hate him for her.
Yeah, so he's like a bad
you
guy.
You better have a you better tell us that you know something we don't know.
Yeah, it's like, Charlotte, you're being really Charlotte right now.
Yeah, Charlotte, can you change your personality, please? Okay, so later at MoMA, Charlotte docents it up. She talks Monet, she talks Pollock, and she brushes off Eric, a nice divorcee who asks her out. She's still not ready. She quickly gets ready, however, when she spots Trey and Bunny wandering through the museum. She rushes her group to avoid them. She also takes Eric up on his dinner offer. She's got to get serious about moving on.
Over at Miranda's, she and Steve put the final touches on her place before the baby comes. They have some tense moments building a crib, but they quickly smooth things over by talking baby names. Steve was thinking Paul, but Miranda wins out with Danny.
Back at Richard's, the Samantha tension finally boils over.
You want out of this, just say it.
I don't want to have sex once and I want out.
Not just once, what about yesterday?
We were at the opera.
I was bored.
I fucked you for 3 hours when we came home.
A big whoop. Why haven't you hung the hearts?
I will.
It's been laying against that wall for days.
I'm not sure it belongs here.
You mean I don't belong here?
Samantha, a stranger to love, didn't do it very well.
Oh, and I heard the weather this morning, but they didn't say anything about a shitstorm.
Oh, my God. It's like the worst read ever.
I stopped by and you weren't there.
I was eating.
Eating? Eating who? I saw you get into a cab with a woman wearing come fuck me heels. Listen, Richard, just tell me you're sleeping with someone else and we'll call it a day.
The hearts would be better in the den. I had a salad and salmon. The woman is a business associate. I do not want out of this. But if you do, this is a good way to go.
I'm sorry.
She was an interior designer. You believe me, right?
A couple things.
Tell me, Jamie.
That line when he goes, what is it? I checked the weather this morning, but I didn't hear anything about, or I didn't read anything about a shitstorm. It was like the worst acting I've ever seen in my life. I just want to flag that. Sorry. I don't know.
Jamie, I feel like
sorry,
you're
James Remar.
Jamie, you're bringing up a good point because I actually think that the guys Samantha dates are often incredibly bad actors. Because they're.
I mean, she is just so fabulous and in it and present, and there's no separation between Kim Cattrall and her character. And then this guy's like, what's the line again? Wow, I read the... It's also really slow. He's
it's
like,
a very,
well, I read the weather this morning, but I didn't hear anything about a shitstorm. You're just like, spit it out, baby.
It's a weirdly labored line. Yeah.
It's so labored.
It's
well,
not,
it's, here's the thing.
You'd be... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, no, go finish, Sky.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, if somebody really said that to you, too, you'd be like, that would actually stop the conversation. You'd be like, what are you talking about?
Oh, my God. It's so funny. It's like in a different show.
It's really goofy.
Every time I watch this episode, that line gets me.
I love, here it comes. Between you, Jamie and Skylar, I love watching and analyzing the show with you because you guys always pick these things that are so true that I might not have been able to verbalize. But I do think, Jamie, that that one observation of yours is actually a global note, which is that because Samantha's lovers are always just cast for their looks, I think a lot of the actors that play these guys are like models or whatever. Like if you even think back to the Staten Island Ferry, like the firefighter.
Oh my God.
They can, all of her lovers like barely speak English.
One of the greats.
Yeah, but they're terrible actors every time.
The man who wanted to know where, or no,
where's the dude?
Samantha asked him about where to buy a shirt, and he genuinely
you
want to
know where to buy a calendar? Yeah, they're just like the dumbest dipshits. Like,
I mean, Rose, even just your like slapdash impression just now was as good as the guy who booked the role.
But but you're right. I think that the guys who they pair her with are like pretty bad actors generally.
Oh man, I mean he's rough. I mean he does hold court and honestly his pacing gives him power, I think, cuz she's so like kind of not manic but definitely like
in the scene,
you know. Kind of yeah, she's up and down because she's a lot of dimension. Her character's amazing. But so it's kind of nice that he kind of like slinks back and he's really slow. I don't know how you felt about this, guys, but like I did not like when he's like, you know, I don't want out. What was the line when he's like, I don't want out of this.
But if you want to, this is a good opportunity to get the hell out of
this. This is a good opportunity. Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. She gets to be upset and she gets to be paranoid because you guys, your whole foundation was built on, you know, having sort of inconsequential sex and keeping things open and fresh and
but that's what gaslighting know,
exploring
is.
Threesome. Yeah, he's totally gaslighting.
It's making somebody
her.
Feel crazy for things that are really legit.
I hate
and then
when she said she
around.
Was sorry. I felt so bad for her.
He is cheating at this moment, so that's exactly the sort of response that you have when like it allows him to deny and put the blame back on her.
It's such a low moral character thing to do. I mean, it's one thing to cheat, and then it's another thing to be like, wow, I can't believe you'd think that I would do that. Like,
totally.
It's disgusting. It actually, now that we're talking about it, because I've you know, obviously seen the show hundreds of times, I didn't realize how awful he's being right now. Like, he's just a flat-out liar. Like, everything I liked about him is just done.
You know what?
In this moment,
people are so cowardly and afraid. And, you know, he's afraid of hurting her feelings. He wants to be this guy for her that he just can't do. And he's just That's digging a hole, you know? And he just can't tell her, like, I can't do this. But just in case, you know, listen, everyone listening on this pod right now has either watched this episode or, you know, I don't think we're spoiling anything because we're all talking about how we later find out that he is cheating. But even despite that, I think there's something really interesting happening here because I can definitely relate to Samantha. Like, I have been with guys who, I mean, to use the classic lingo that I always use, he is an avoidant and he is avoiding intimacy. And I think this guy really does love Samantha. And I think he wishes that he could be monogamous, but he can't. He's got intimacy problems and he's sabotaging it. And I think he's doing what all avoidants do, which is he's pulling away from her because it's getting real. And so he's like sleeping with other people and not sleeping with her for a night. And this has happened to me before. I've never been cheated on that I know of. I don't think I have been, but I have felt someone slipping away. And I have I've had those conversations where I seem hysterical and I'm like, but you didn't call me last night. And like, we didn't hang out. And there's always a logical answer. Well, aren't we allowed to be with our friends? And like, I'm sorry, I fell asleep. And then you feel super crazy, but like, you know, in the pit of your stomach, when someone is pulling away, you just know it. And like, people can explain it away and make you feel crazy. And then you act crazy. But I don't know about men because I'm not a man, but I do think women, and maybe men do too, maybe everybody does, but I think human beings have a sixth sense when they're losing someone, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Totally.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And then the hard thing is when you're insecure that you're losing someone, you act crazy. And so it pushes them away more. And so then you like, I mean, I'm right now totally projecting this scene onto an experience. I know.
No. We've all been there. What you're describing is very real.
Yeah. It's like someone pulls away and then you feel crazy and then they tell you that you're being crazy. And then you like, then, I mean, for me, I've been in situations where then I'm like, oh my God, they're pulling away because I'm being crazy. It's actually my fault. And it's not, it's that they're pulling away because they're pulling away, but because it makes you crazy, then you end up feeling like shit that you did it. You know,
also, it's so frustrating. I mean, this is sort of off topic, but not really. It is so frustrating that women get the label crazy. Like, I just don't. It's not even like we're more emotional, so that's why that happens. It's also like, yeah, but if men have a hard time expressing how they feel, whether they're in the relationship, whether they want out, there is gaslighting happening all the time.
It's crazy making.
It's crazy making. So if we could just acknowledge the way that men and women are, our communication strategies, how they're, I mean, we're socialized differently, therefore we communicate differently, therefore we process emotions differently. The reason that women have a reaction is because they are being gaslit?
Gaslit.
I think gaslit.
Gaslit.
Past tense.
It is gaslit, but I feel like people say gaslighted.
I lit the candle.
Right.
Oh,
no,
I guess
I
you
know.
Could say I light
I
the candle.
Like
you could say either way. Dealer's choice.
I lit. Okay. Gaslit.
I think that sounds good.
Gaslit.
I think both work.
Yes. Okay. Well, I feel very strongly about it. And I think it's like, I just hate that. I hate that that's a thing that happens with women. And then, yeah, it's just, I know that this isn't like a new topic or anything.
But it's apropos to the scene.
It makes
sense.
Bummer. It's such a bummer. It's such a bummer to watch Samantha apologize when she's on to something. And it's such a bummer for him to make her feel like she needs to apologize. It's just, and this scene is so relatable. Like,
so painful. It sucks.
This has happened where I've like flipped the fuck out and then I'm like, I'm sorry. I just did it. And you're like, what? Wait, no, you know that you set off a reaction with the way you behaved. So at least take the ownership and let's have a mature discussion about why I'm reacting this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And I think that there's a person in my life who's very difficult, who often calls me sensitive. Well, you're just really sensitive. So there's nothing I can do that'll ever, I get that a lot from this person. And it's like calling someone crazy. It's like, well, if you say really mean things to me and then I say that hurts my feelings and then you call me sensitive, it's kind of like, I don't really know what, how can I win this? It's like, if you make someone so feel hard. Crazy and if you fuck with someone, they start losing it and then you call them crazy. It's like, it's not focusing on the right things.
Yeah it's so hard. Yeah, go
it's
ahead,
like, it's like if somebody punches you in the face and then you get upset at that and then they're like, well, you just hate getting punched in the face. It's like, yeah. Well, you did the thing.
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to see Samantha this way, but, you know, I've definitely been there when I can feel a relationship slipping out of my fingers and you get really desperate and it's a horrible feeling.
I feel like in my 20s, I was like oblivious to, I just assumed, I'll say like early 20s, I just assumed like everyone, dating was just being in relationships. Like, I didn't understand that people were like playing the field. I mean, I did. Obviously, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't realize it was happening to me as quickly as I should have. So I had these moments where I remember I was dating this one guy and he was like pretty rich. He was like some music producer, I think. I don't know. But he, oh man, I want to say his name so badly because it is funny.
Go ahead,
but,
say it.
Okay, I was dating this guy. Okay, should I not do it? I shouldn't do it. Okay,
what,
I'll just
Skyler,
tell you.
What do you think?
I'm gonna tell you what his name was based. I'll give us enough to where you feel satisfied and you don't feel like I just left you hanging.
Jamiroquai?
Give us like exact rhymes.
Named, no, yeah. I'm like, okay, his name was Macklemore. You're like, no.
Michael
no, no.
J. Fox.
Okay, no. So, so no, he, okay. So he wore a particular type of jewelry and his last name was that type of jewelry. I'll just say that.
That's wonderful.
I don't
that's
know who
also,
that is.
I just,
I'll tell you.
That's
off,
a very
off,
funny, just like character
mic,
detail.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that's who I was. That was
God,
type of
Quizzerino Quizzies obviously knows
yeah,
exactly
yeah, yeah.
who it
but
is.
But he was just like a white Jewish guy who, I don't know. Okay, whatever. Point is, but he was like very hot and like kind of like a bad boy. Didn't like say much. Like I was just very intrigued by him. I was like, what is this dude? And he was like a great artist, also like visual artist. He like drew all these amazing things. And I was just like, this guy is like a fucking mystery that I am ready to solve, baby. And
prepare to be solved.
Prepare to be solved. And then I find out through a friend of mine that he was like fucking this like gorgeous model on the side. And I was like, really? Really? Like, I just assumed I was it. And then I was like, huh, is that so? Like, of course he was, Jamie. Of course.
No, you were a baby. You didn't know.
A guy who names himself after the piece of jewelry he wears.
I'll just say it right now.
I can't. Okay.
Jake Zirconium.
Dave Diamonds?
Yeah, his name was Dave Diamond.
Ralph Ruby?
Yeah, yeah.
Was his name James Jade? God, I wish I knew who this was. Chris Alex Choker?
Anyways, guys.
Wait a minute. I know who this is. Anthony Anklet. It's Anthony Anklet.
Oh my God, it is. Yeah, it's Charlie Choker. Okay. Anyways, he. Okay, well.
Charlie Choker? I loved him.
Yeah, he was a good dude, but he definitely.
But he was fucking models.
He was fucking.
Okay, well, I have something to say bounced off of that.
I had, like, no idea. I felt like such a doofus.
The guy I lost my virginity to was in his 30s, and, you know, I was 19, and he was very hot, and he was a surfer, and he told me he was still friends with his ex, and we went to the beach once, and he went surfing and just, like, left me to hang out with this group of, like, 30-year-olds, including his ex, and everyone was like super mean to me, and no one would talk to me, and it was really, really awkward, and no one was nice to me.
I hate that.
We kept sleeping together and kind of dating, and then I found out he fully still had that girlfriend. She wasn't an ex at all.
Oh wow!
And I found that out, and then I bumped into her at the, and this is a guy who told me after we had had sex and after I lost my virginity to him, like, you're my dream girl. You're so incredible. I've never met anyone like you. You're beautiful. You're perfect. And then I was like, oh, so like, are we boyfriend and girlfriend? He's like, whoa. And then I found out not only that, that he lived next door to his ex. No, not even his ex, his current girlfriend. And I saw her, and this is me. I'm just like this young 19-year-old with this like horrendous, I just, you know, my dad just like left my life. I was so, so lost. And then I saw his ex, who was this beautiful girl in her 30s, at the supermarket. And I was just like, by the way, like, I don't know what I said, but I was like, what's your relationship with him? And she's like, oh, we're together. And I was like, oh, because, like, we've been dating. And then he called me, and he was like, you're fucking crazy. You're insane. You know, you're a fucking psycho. Yeah.
Oh, and it, my God.
And I'm like, talk about, like, manipulating me.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, sorry. That just makes me sound really sad, but
no. No, it doesn't. I mean, that stuff happens a lot. Like, when you said that, I was like, oh, all I was doing is wrecking my brain. I was like, this feels very familiar. I'm like trying to think of the thing that happened to me that was very similar. So,
well, it's a story that you told about, like, you think that things are working and then you have no idea you're being cheated on. And
then
when you bring it up, people are like, stop being so fucking crazy. Like, it's why? It just makes you feel like you're losing your mind. Like, wait a minute. You literally said I was your dream girl and I lost my virginity to you. And then I find out you have a full girlfriend the whole time.
I mean, it's also just that it's just so gross. It's also that thing of like, it's so gross to think that guys just like say what they think girls want to hear and honestly what they do want to hear. And it like works
it's
on
really
us.
It's really sad. It's just awful. Not like, pathetic on just, us, but it's just
no,
such
but
a manipulative
it's
thing
just,
to do.
Yeah, it totally is. I remember that dude, the guy, Johnny Pukashels. I was on a ski trip with some friends in Vermont and I like went back early. Well, it was also, I'm so bad at group trips. I've gotten a lot better, but in my 20s, I was like, because also in your 20s, it's like, there's no heat in the house. And you're like, we're in fucking Vermont. And it's like, everything's funny. No. It's like, isn't it funny that we don't have heat in the house? It's cool.
It's not for Jewish American princess.
Floor. No, I was like, absolutely not. I was like, where am I sleeping? They're like, there's not.
I don't like that
there
stuff
is
either.
One bed. But like in your 20s, you had to just like, you just had to like, what's the word I'm looking for? Adjust or like not
go
even
with
adjust.
It
you
or
had
whatever.
To, roll with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like you had to, like acclimate. You just had to be like, yeah, no, yeah, sure. Okay, yeah, I'm going to sleep on the floor and there's no heat in the house and we're in
the worst part of those things for
Vermont
me.
Vermont in the middle of the winter. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that I hated the same things. And to me, the worst part was like, hey, we're all going to do acid in the park. Like, do you want to also? Yep. And I'd be like, you know what? I should probably run the dishwasher because like, how will those dishes get done?
Right. Oh, I was always doing that shit. Or sometimes I would fake being sick just to be like, I gotta go to bed. Yeah. I gotta get away from these people.
Yeah, same.
But anyway, so I flew back early. I don't think it was a flight. I can't remember if I flew or drove. I took the train back early to see Johnny Puka Shelves.
To see Antoinette Charm Bracelet?
Fucking, yeah, seeing Antoinette Charm Bracelet, even though he was definitely fucking the model while I was gone skiing. Anyways,
okay, wait.
Let's move on.
Wait, last thing to say before we move on.
Okay, okay.
Everything is 1 degree, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Everything is 1 degree from Sex and the City, so.
I think we're saying everything is 1 degree of Johnny Puka Shelves.
Everything is also, but okay. I was going to say there's something that made me sad recently, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners on this podcast who may not be fans of this person, but I still really, truly respect and like the work of Lena Dunham. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about her yesterday because her ex-boyfriend, Jack Antonoff, is now dating a stunning blonde, you know, 7-foot, 10-pound model. Just a photographer that looks like she is an anime and she's been photoshopped. And, you know, he just finished like Taylor Swift's album and worked on this and worked on that. And his girlfriend is like, five of them would make Lena Dunham. And I'm not saying that in a fat shaming way. This woman is tiny, tiny, tiny. I hope that wasn't fat shaming. If it was, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I just mean, I could see how hard it would feel.
I get what you're
saying. Lena Dunham has a lot of issues. She's got a lot of racial blind spots and she is problematic, but you know, I think I'm a little more empathetic because I thought her show was absolutely brilliant and incredible.
Oh,
and
I loved Girls.
It's incredible. And also as somebody who's only been dealing with chronic pain for 2 months and she's been dealing with it for like 5 years, you know, she like gained 100 pounds or whatever. And I was just thinking about how hard it would be to be in chronic pain, gain a bunch of weight, be kind of canceled, and then just see your boyfriend like doing Taylor Swift's album and dating a girl that looks like Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
That can't be easy.
Yeah, we live in a ridiculous society that has very limited standards of what things should look like. And I do think it's getting better.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's an uphill climb.
There are still like really dramatic inequities.
And I just want to say,
100%.
I just want to say when I close this, because like, I just feel like it's so hard to talk about anything without people getting upset. I understand why people don't like Lena Dunham and why her comments have been insensitive. And I do think she has work to do, but I do think her entire dismissing all the work she's done and saying that she's not valuable, I don't agree with.
Yeah. You're allowed to have your opinion.
That's what I
think. It's okay. And she's also someone that people, I think she also is someone who embraces that people have their opinions about her. Every interview I hear with her, she's always very poised about, you know, knowing that people are team Lena or not, like she, you know, I think that's something about her that I really admire is her. So she has a fearlessness to her that, I think that even if you're whatever, quote unquote, polarizing, it is nice to at least live your life with integrity. And I do think she tries to do that. I'm not saying she doesn't misfire. I'm not here defending. I'm just saying that is the sense I get. I don't know her. I've met her once or twice, but I don't know why I said or twice.
Just actually, add another
twice,
time.
Guys. It wasn't just once, guys. It was twice.
We lived together.
It was
She's
a whopping two times.
Well, I think this is the thing.
You're going to get fact checked on that.
Here's the thing.
Actually, it was twice. Okay.
Listen, she's put her foot in her mouth. I totally understand that she can be extremely annoying and navel-gazy. I get why people don't like her. I do think as a writer, I think Girls was like a fucking groundbreaking show.
I think it paved
the way for so many other phenomenal shows.
Absolutely.
And I think her...
And female voice.
Yeah, and I think her presentation of her body was completely revolutionary.
It was huge.
I think she's a huge talent.
She's like a warrior of the body positivity.
Yeah, I think she's really talented. I hope she can find her way. I do think she needs to do work. I mean, she definitely has racial blind spots and lots of privilege that she needs to work through. But I think throwing her in the trash is, I'm not there. That's not where I'm at. That's that.
I was also just going to say, and so many men are totally permitted to be navel-gazy in their work and they don't ever receive the same
Great
level
point.
Of vitriol.
Great point. Oh, no. I mean, the level is yeah. The
She was in
yeah,
her...
Misogyny is real, guys. Misogyny is 100%. Real.
So, after their argument, Samantha meets up with Carrie. She's still convinced that Richard is cheating, and she puts a whole disguise together to do some detective work. Carrie's not sure it's a good idea, but she drops it when she spots some shoes that she absolutely must have.
And Charlotte has dinner with Eric, the MoMA divorcee. They bond over what brought down their marriages. For her and Trey, it was different goals. And for him and his ex, it was different backgrounds. It goes so well, Charlotte invites him over, which quickly proves to be a bad idea. He cannot handle the wow size of her place, and she has him leave. I loved this guy.
Hilarious.
So funny.
I loved that scene. Wow. What does he say? He's like, wow. Oh my God. You have your own place. Wow. You own all this furniture. Wow. It's great. I loved him.
It was a great scene.
Studio. Yeah.
It was a really great scene.
So funny.
So then Carrie catches up with Miranda. She has given herself the okay to have farewell sex with Big, and Miranda's just going to have to get on board. Miranda does, but she also asks Carrie to be in the room with her when she delivers her baby, which is incredibly like, oh my God, their relationship. Because Miranda's worried that Steve's too emotional to handle it solo.
Later, Carrie and Big have their last date night. They take a sweet carriage ride through Central Park, but halfway through, Carrie gets a call. It is time. Miranda is going into labor. Big gives the carriage driver $400 to get them to Mount Sinai quick. And the guy giddies his horses up.
It's so funny. Like, this is the problem with being like a PC liberal is like I watch people in a horse-drawn carriage and I'm like, that's animal abuse.
I think a lot of people feel that
way. I'm just
way.
Like, I mean, how is this romantic? This horse is like, water.
Yeah. Right. Just like shitting his brains
yeah,
out.
It's like being like kicked with like metal.
Yeah.
So when Carrie gets to the hospital, she finds Miranda pacing in her room. Miranda is trying to get her water to break desperately, and Carrie wants to help. It ends up not taking much. As soon as Miranda stands still, her water breaks all over Carrie's brand new Louboutins.
And Samantha gets to work on her Richard cheating sting operation. She's got her white coat, her big sunglasses, her wig. She is unrecognizable. She tails him in a cab back to his place where the man confirms her suspicions. He is cheating. His whole face is buried in a naked woman Sam has never met. So Samantha smashes the heart painting and storms out, which honestly is a positive that thing is disgusting.
Somebody needed to do that.
Someone needed to ruin that.
I have to say it's been a while since I've seen this episode, and I think I didn't fully remember what happened. And I just remember her dressed up in that disguise and watching the episode going, please, please don't be right. Please be wrong. Please be paranoid and it not actually. I was so sad. It was so heartbreaking when she caught him. You know, and it's a really good, well-written episode because they're gearing it up to make her seem like the crazy fucking lady who bought a wig and, oh my God, this woman is so fucking unhinged. And then you're just like, she's not unhinged. Sadly, she's completely right.
She was 100% right. Yeah, I really appreciated it. I thought it actually was a great way to
validate her.
Yeah, and also to like flip that whole trope on its head of like, you're fucking crazy, lady.
Yeah,
it's like,
right.
No, she was right. She was just, it was women's intuition the entire time. So I thought they did a really good job with that. Anyways.
You're absolutely right. Back with Miranda, it's finally time. The baby is here. Carrie has to silence an overeager nurse, but for the most part, the delivery is smooth and drama-free. When Steve hands Miranda the baby, she rethinks Danny. What about Brady? He tears up and that settles it. Welcome to the world, Brady Hobbs. My heart is exploding.
Obsessed. Charlotte and Samantha make it to the hospital just as Carrie is heading out. She still wants to catch Big, but when she makes it to his place, it's too late. The last of his boxes are gone, and so is he. He did leave her something, however, a Henry Mancini record and plane tickets. Whatever they are now, they aren't done. She wanders out onto the street where she picks up the first leaf of fall.
It was official. A new season had begun.
Oh, this song is so amazing.
Maybe our mistakes are what make our fate. Without them, what would shape our lives? Perhaps if we never veered off course, we wouldn't fall in love or have babies or be who we are. After all, seasons change. So do cities. People come into your life and people go. But it's comforting to know the ones you love are always in your heart. And if you're very lucky, a plane ride away.
Okay. Well,
I mean, literally,
I don't have anything to say.
I don't have anything to say.
It was just beautiful. It was beautiful, but also like, here we go.
Here we go. I mean, the plane tickets, it leaves the door open. It's a beautiful scene at the delivery.
I'm surprised you even gave her plane tickets. I thought he would just peace out and then be like, call me.
It's like a Chinatown bus.
I was a little confused by that because can she just use the plane tickets whenever? Or
like,
does she have a date set?
I know what you mean. It felt like more of like an American Express gift card, if you will. Yeah,
he left two Starbucks gift cards for her.
Yeah. Hey, have one on me.
Yeah. And she tries to get two teas, but there's only $5 on it.
Yeah. And it's on both cards. Like one has $250 and the other has $250. It's like she can't cover it.
Can you use both? Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful episode. It's a beautiful end of the season. You know, it's exciting so much. Season four, it's a huge, huge season. Samantha falls in love and gets her heart broken for the first time that we've seen. Mm. Miranda Hobbs has a baby. Charlotte is now divorced and dating. And Carrie is completely single. And her on and off again love is now in California. So it's the end of an era. It's an end of a season, literally and figuratively. And it's a beautiful, beautiful wrap up of a gorgeous season, in my opinion.
Yes. And the episode and the season closes with one more love letter dedicated to our city of New York, then, now, and forever. So this was the 9/11 mm-hmm. season.
Yeah, this was the first episode shot after 9/11 is the episode, is the season five premiere. But mm-hmm. yeah, this all of everything, these last like six episodes, I want to say, were all aired after 9/11. So this whole thing is like very melancholy and mm. aware of 9/11 having just happened. Mm.
Well, this brings us to the question of the episode.
Later that night, I got to thinking about fate, that crazy concept that we're not really responsible for the course our lives take. That it's all predestined, written in the stars. Maybe that explains why, if you live in a city where you can't even see the stars, your love life tends to feel a little more random. And even if our every man, every kiss, every heartache is pre-ordered from some cosmic catalog, can we still take a wrong step and wander off our own personal Milky Way? I couldn't help but wonder, can you make a mistake and miss your fate?
I don't think so because your fate.
I hate this question.
I don't think so because I think if you miss something or something doesn't happen or a relationship ends and you always wonder, I think that regret is possible. I definitely think that that's a real human feeling.
Agreed.
But I think whatever happens in your life is your fate. There's no road that you didn't take that was supposed to. Whatever is what actually shakes out is your fate. That's it.
Yeah.
So anything you didn't do,
I think that's
anyone you weren't with, that's that.
I think that's a really nice way to look at it because it makes you feel more in control. I think when you talk about fate, it's a little like, what are you supposed to do? Like, let's say you do want to like chase your fate. Like, what does that look like? Do you just kind of like stand in a field and like wait for a sign? Like, I think you have to look at it with, I think you have to be a little more pragmatic about it and believe that like, nope, I'm like, this is what my life is supposed to look like. And it's going to continue to have twists and turns based on what should be there.
Yeah. I just feel like this idea of like, can you miss a wrong turn? For example, maybe there's someone that 5 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever, that you're like, God, they were right there and they're so amazing. Now they're married with kids. And I was too fucked up and insecure to like, go there with them. And I was only interested in bad boys or whatever. So I missed my fate. You didn't. You weren't ready for it at the time.
Yeah. Imagine if you tried to make that work, then it would have fallen apart because you weren't emotionally
you're
ready
for what you're ready for. And if you, you know, and it's totally human to sometimes look back and be wistful or wish that you could have been different. We can only be where we are and we're only ready for what we're ready for. You know, it's like, it can be frustrating, but that's just that. So, yeah, I don't really believe that you can, like, ruin your fate. I actually think, you know, you try and be aware of your actions. You try and grow as a person, but life is so much bigger than you are. And everyone's just doing the best they can. And what happens is what happens. And if something didn't happen that you wished happened or a relationship didn't work out that you wished, I don't think it's worth beating yourself up about because everyone is doing their best, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's all very well said. And I also just think, yeah, don't beat yourself up. I mean, like, it's impossible to live a life without any regret. That's just not realistic. So if you have regrets, those are your regrets. Other people have other regrets. There's no one out there who's like, I did. Yeah. Like, and if they do,
it's not true. Nobody's
they're like,
out there like that.
Live life to the fullest and don't look back. It's like, you're just saying that because you're like hoping someone will turn it into a t-shirt that's sold at Patagonia someday. Like, I don't know.
Well, Jamie,
it's like, it's not really how life
is. It's interesting that you say that because this morning I listened to it's not my horny for, but I listened to an amazing podcast interview with Oprah interviewing Steven Tyler. And I'm not even a huge Aerosmith fan necessarily. But it ties into what you're saying because you're saying this idea that like the only, you know, maybe there's people that have no regrets that just like lived really hard. Like Steven Tyler is like a millionaire rock star and he has tons of regrets. He totally abandoned his kids to go on the road. Yep. He like ruined marriages with a drug habit. And like he's had a really fun, full life. But he also has regrets. Like even if you do... Even if you do achieve like a bunch of wonderful things and go traveling the world, like there's regrets on the other side of that too. Like,
yeah. And also it's how you deal with your regrets. You can have regrets and you don't have to live in them.
Yes.
You don't have to sit there and weigh yourself down with them.
No, he's like built a relationship and apologize.
But it doesn't mean you don't have them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can still move forward and be like, oh yeah, there were things in my past. That
things to learn from.
Really... Yeah, exactly. Like if you don't acknowledge regrets, I don't know how you grow.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's a balance of looking back and wanting to maybe change behavior, but not
punish
living
yourself
in a punishment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jamie,
okay, cool.
Hit it.
Yes. Well, our final segment is called I'm Horny For, because Sex and the City is obviously a very horny show. So we end each episode by sharing what we are currently horny for. Rose, what are you horny for right now?
Well, thank you for asking, Jay Molina. I'm going to do two because this is like quarantine. And obviously I just have so much TV time.
Oh yeah, no, tell the listeners.
One thing that I'm extremely horny for is a beautiful reality unscripted show. Both things I'm horny for are on Netflix. One of them is a dating reality show called On the Spectrum. Mm-hmm. And it's about
I want to watch people
with autism dating. And it is just a beautiful relatable, gorgeous show that with characters that are just the most endearing. It's just a yes. And then the other show that I would like to... Actually, I'm going to do three. I'm sorry. And I'll make them really quick.
Oh my God. How dare you?
The other show that I would like to highly recommend is a sports documentary that was on ESPN that is now on Netflix called The Last Dance about the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
And I played basketball in high school, but I don't watch sports anymore. I don't hate sports, but I don't really feel passionate either way. But it's absolutely riveting. It's kind of like I watched the Lady Gaga doc and I also feel the same way about Lady Gaga that I do about sports. I'm just completely neutral. I'm not a fan of her music. I don't hate her. But when something is a worldwide phenomenon, I'm interested. And so the Chicago Bulls, it's almost like American history. It's just learning about something that was like absolutely huge for our country and our American culture. So, and just like learning about people who are like the best of the best, like immortal Olympian level humans.
Absolutely. I think that's interesting. I've heard that documentary. Really
absolutely
great.
Fascinating, whether you like basketball or not. I wouldn't consider myself a person that's into basketball. So that's the second one.
Okay, keep going.
So the last thing I want to recommend is a YouTube channel called Twins, The New Trend. So the word twins, the word the word new and trend, Twins, The New Trend. It is a young teenage, really adorable black kid and his brother, but mostly it's him. I don't know how I stumbled onto it, but I stumbled onto it and ended up staying up until 4 a.m. watching a bunch of his videos, like for an hour and a half. And it's this kid and he's like, hey, he's like, I'm black. I grew up listening to rap. I've never listened to a rock song before in my life. And he only makes reaction videos of him reacting to music he has never heard before. And then you see like the music video below. And when I was a teenager, the most important thing in the world to me was music. I played guitar. I wrote songs. I was obsessed with classic rock. And this makes me sound old, but watching this kid discover Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, the Doors, Alice Cooper, like, and his jaw just to the floor, Radiohead, like, this kid is just like astounded. And then he's also listening to some new black music he's never heard. He never heard of Nina Simone and Salt-N-Pepa and Lauryn Hill. And like, basically it's just watching someone discover stuff that you've loved for so long. And he reacts really intensely. So he's like, what? This is amazing. He's obsessed with Queen. He loves Queen. Like,
aww.
So if you want to like watch someone discover the things that meant so, it's very nostalgic. It's just watching someone discover.
That's so cool.
It's amazing. So, and I would say if you're going to watch them, watch him discover Creep by Radiohead. That's a really...
Oh my God. Okay. I'll start
there. He's never heard it before and he's just so touched. He cries. It's like amazing.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
So those are my big three. I've been obviously laying around and watching a lot of shit. So Jamie, what is your horny for this week?
Yes, it is a food one. Great. I got some great responses about my grilled broccoli. Mm. So I'm going to lean into, my few and far between recipes. I have truly the best marinade ever for salmon and it's so simple. Actually, it's a marinade for anything. It's just kind of my like go-to fallback one. But it's basically, I don't really measure. So I'm just going to say equal parts, but it's just four ingredients. It's butter, honey, soy sauce and garlic or garlic powder, kind of a lot of it. And you just like mix it up in a saucepan, like on really low heat, let the butter melt, let the like honey sort of emulsify or whatever word I'm supposed to use for cooking. I just like pulled that one out of my ass. I've heard emulsify on cooking shows. I'm going to use it. But yeah, you just like kind of make it all blend together. And it does get really sticky if you let it cool. So you kind of just need to like put it on stuff pretty quickly, I would say. Don't let it like sit out, or you can like reheat it to warm it up again. But anyways, yeah, it's great. And I've been using it on salmon. I put it on the grill in a little foil packet and it's just the most
delicious.
I
saw a picture of it on your Instagram. It looks incredible.
Yeah, you don't have to. Thank you. You don't have to let it, it's not like a marinade you have to like let something soak in for a long time. You can just sort of put it on whatever you're cooking and then like grill it or saute it or whatever. And it does, I think because of the honey, it like sticks to it pretty hard. So it doesn't burn off. It just stays and it's great.
That sounds delicious. I'm definitely going to try that. It sounds so good.
Honey, soy sauce, garlic, butter.
I could just eat all that stuff separately.
Yeah, that's why they're great when they're combined.
Okay, guys, try her recipe. Watch that stuff. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, love you guys.
Love ya.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod. And follow my co-host, Rose Cerno, on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host, Jamie, at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. If you're nasty, it helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.